Okay, Genesis 13. Anybody got their Bible? And Abraham, I'm going to read it first, then we'll come back and study it, okay? And Abraham went up out of Egypt, he and his wife, and all that he had, and Lot with him, into the south. And Abram was very rich in cattle, and in silver, and in gold. And he went on his journeys from the south even to Bethel, unto the place where his tent had been at the beginning, between Bethel and Ai, unto the place of the altar which he had made there at the first. And there Abram called on the name of the Lord. And Lot also, which went with Abram, had flocks and herds and tents. And the land was not able to bear them, that they might dwell together, for their substance was great, so that they could not dwell together. And there was a strife between the herdmen of Abram's cattle and the herdmen of Lot's cattle. And the Canaanite and the Perizzite dwelled then in the land. And Abram said unto Lot, Let there be no strife, I pray thee, between me and thee, and between my herdmen and thy herdmen, for we be brethren. Is not the whole land before thee? Separate thyself, I pray thee, from me. If thou wilt take the left hand, then I will go to the right, or if thou depart to the right hand, then I will go to the left. And Lot lifted up his eyes, and behold, all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, even as the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as thou comest unto Zoar. Then Lot chose him all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated themselves, the one from the other. And Abraham dwelled in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelled in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent toward Sodom. But the men of Sodom were wicked and sinners before the Lord exceedingly. And the Lord said unto Abram, After that Lot was separated from him, lift up now thine eyes, and look from the place where thou art, northward, and southward, and eastward, and westward. For all the land which thou seest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed forever. And I will make thy seed as the dust of the earth, so that if a man can number the dust of the earth, then shall thy seed also be numbered. Arise, walk through the land in the length of it, and in the breadth of it, for I will give it unto thee. Then Abram removed his tent, and came and dwelt in the plain of Mamre, which is in Hebron, and built there an altar unto the Lord. Abram went up out of Egypt. If you read before, in verse something of 12, he went down to Egypt, and now he's going up to Canaan. To go up is the word Allah in the Hebrew, and it's where Muhammad got the name of the Muslim God. I mean, Muhammad is really a jerk if you really read. If you read...
Well, that makes sense, though.
Was there a Muhammad?
Yeah, of course there was.
Yeah, Hagar's son.
No. Ishmael was Hagar's son. But Muhammad was a... Sure, he was a prophet that lived in the 5th century. Sixth century. That... He was a kind of a mystical kid. He was always doing weird stuff. Basically, what happened is he spent 3 months alone in a cave with a Christian mystic. And he came out of the cave and he started writing down what happened. And then he politicized the Bible. He took out of the Bible all the stuff that he didn't understand. And he left it with that, and he ended up with what's called the Quran. They have the same characters, they have the same things in the outline, but fundamentally, like he was a very moral man. There would never have been a Muslim religion, except what happened is he had this great experience, God stuff experience. And he went and told the Jews that lived at Medina about it, that he was now one of them, because he had had experience with God. And they laughed at him and kicked him out of town, so he went down to Mecca. If that little group of Jews, if Mel had not made fun of Mohammed's nice little God stuff experience, we wouldn't have all these problems in the Middle East now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just been a little nicer.
Or Medina might have been the center of
that moment. Yeah. Okay, anyway. You go down, he went down, fell into Egypt, he ascended, he Allah to Canaan. Now Lot had apparently been with him, or was with him in Egypt. The word rich there, and it says, it's the Hebrew word kebed, and it means he was heavy. It was so heavy with possessions, he was weighted down with his possessions. You guys wouldn't know what that means.
Management
of the whole thing. This box for the whole life. That's all. Now, he returned to the place between Bethel and Ai, where he had been at the beginning, unto the place of the altar which he had made there first at Shechem. In other words, he went through all this, and now he's back to the beginning. He learned nothing. He did nothing. No good happened to him.
Accomplished nothing.
Got a lot of gold.
Like
the, yeah, he robbed
Egypt. Yeah, all it did is weighed him down. And you're going to see what his little excursion into Egypt cost him. It cost him the one that was closest to him, of all of the people that there were in his life, and that was Lot.
Oh, you know what? He goes to Shechem, right? The place of dropping the burden. And then he goes off on this escapade and comes back with more burden.
That's right. Hmm. Now, if you'll notice, all the time that he was in Egypt, which is the type of the world, there's no mention of prayer or there's no altar in Egypt. Whoa. You can't pray in Egypt. You can't pray in the world. All you can do is pray to your stupid little gods and the gods of your fathers. Now, we're going to come to this thing. There's a strife that's taking place. Verse 9, it says that Abraham did this. Abraham, it was Abraham's idea. He said, "Is not the whole land before me?" They had a strife. Abraham, rather than there was disappointment, there was resentment, and there was frustration at these strifes between these two camps, if you will. Rather than sit down and have them worked out, they separated. And it was Abraham's idea that they separate. In verse 9, "Is not the whole land before thee? Separate thyself, I pray thee, from me." It's just, man, it's really sad if you see it. So what does Lot do? Lot, in this case, represents the carnal you. Abraham, even in this metaphor, even when he makes a mistake, still represents the spiritual you. You understand? So Lot opens his eyes and he looks. And he looks towards the east, and he sees the most beautiful of all places on the face of the earth. There's not been anything like it since the Garden of Eden. You know where that place is? It's what's now the Dead Sea. This valley that is encompassed by the Dead Sea became Lot's possession. It was the most beautiful of all places on the face of the earth. It was well watered. Why? Because, as we saw, this river I mean the River Jordan, which is the type of life, started up here in the property or the stuff given to Dan, and it flowed freely all the way into the sea, and this the river continued here as we saw in these other maps. It continued down here. And all this was well watered and free and open and beautiful. Now what happens? Thank you. So Lot takes it. It's what your eyes see. I want to choose that. He missed the mystery because he's looking eastward. He's looking backwards from where he came from, where his forefathers came from. They came from the east. When he chooses what his eyes see, and he acts on what his eyes see, there we'll take a break. The lesson that we didn't, and we won't have time to go through tonight, is the lesson of Lot, which is really this same lesson of Abram and Lot and their separation. You are accepted without condition. You are loved without condition. There are no performance standards whatsoever. The reason anorexia is so hard to see is because all of us are guilty of spiritual anorexia. And the lesson of the Nazarite vow is to address the lie that you don't need any more than you have. I mean, to address the lie that you think you need or have to have or be different than you are, or to have something that you don't have at this moment. And it's the lesson of this is to lose all these things and count them but dung, not lose these things and look forward to the time when you can have them. To lose these things and look forward to the time when you can have them causes the Nazarite vow to be a lie. To lose these things and to sit and think, well, I wished I was somewhere else. I wished I was there. I wished, you know, every time I hear that, I would say, well, go there. Are you missing a cigarette? Go smoke it. Are you missing a steak? Go eat it. Are you missing some location in the world? Go there. Stop your mind from the lie that you need something besides that which you have at this instant. And everything else was dung. Everything that you've had in the past that you thought was good was looking eastward. Do you understand? A little bit? Praying eastward, praying to the rising sun. Where you've been. We look forward to that which is darkness by the perception. Why? Why do we face west? Why do we pray westward? Let the idiots, let Muhammad and his idiots pray eastward, facing Mecca. You don't need anything more than you have at this instant. To go backwards is to say, well, I promise you, is to go backwards is to, you're going to sell your sister. The only problem this time, there might be a buyer. There's nothing back there. There's absolutely nothing of value behind you. There's nothing of value. There's nothing that will endure. There's nothing that will bring you joy. There's nothing that will bring you peace. There's nothing that will bring you love behind you, which is, it's like before, right, anything before this instant is behind you. You hear me? Some of you are worshiping in the darkness of your being that which is behind you. Go there. Don't waste my time. Don't waste God's time. Go there if it's behind you and you want it. You're being deceived. I promise you. Now, at least have the courage of talking about it openly so that it has a chance of being exposed. It has a chance of being brought to the light that it can be seen. But if you worship in the darkness that which is behind you, and you come and say to God that you love Him and you're living by faith, you're a living lie. And you wonder why I bust you? You wonder why God bust you? You hear me? I pray that you'll see it. Now, the basic lie of all, the lie that the evil one has deceived the whole world, is that you are separate from the source of life and you need something. You need love. You need this, you need that, you need this, 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 you need this. Every one of I need is a lie. Go back. Don't you see he's whipped, the evil one has whipped you around. You remember when you guys didn't, maybe those of you who grew up where it was cold in the wintertime, we played this game on ice skates. Crack the whip. And there were 20 or 30 people out on a huge lake, and there was somebody in the middle. And then they would line up, and whoever was it was out in the end. And the guy in the middle just sort of stood there. And the goal of it was to get going as fast as you could and then break it going the other direction, stop in the middle, and then it just sort of, it was like a bullwhip going. And the one in the end, usually we pick the littlest guy. I mean, you send him going 30 miles an hour across the lake.
The open
water. Huh?
For those of us who grew up in the
yeah, in the plains.
We landed on the grass. We did. Yeah. We would run.
Yeah.
But you see, every one of you, the evil one has had as the end one on the crack the whip line. And even this day, you've been out there being if your eye is single, your whole body is full of light. But for the eye to be single, there can be no thing that you desire from the past. You understand that? Now, you don't have to do it. You see, the battle is in the mind. So if in your mind on the Nazarite vow, you begin to think about what you would do if you weren't on the Nazarite vow, then you're not in the Nazarite vow. You understand?
Seems incredibly impossible when you put it that way. If you do.
Now the blessing is the people for us that seem to have strength after the flesh. The blessing as the ones that are weak. And they are the blessing to us to show us faith. Now think about that one. We as a body couldn't exist without their weakness in this area. But for your benefit, it has to be confessed. It has to be openly stated and talked about. We commend ourselves openly to every man's conscience in the sight of God. Now, half the time, like, you know, I've been spending a lot of time with Harry lately. And half the time, he just thinks I'm running around in a bad mood. Well, what's happening, huh?
Not lately.
Well, what's happening is like, I mean, some of the, not just you, but Powell, and I mean, all of the, I mean, the conversations are the evidence. Well, out of the fullness of your heart, your mouth speaks. I guess I would like to be around this, all of you the same way, I guess, during the day.
Yeah, you said it a week and a half ago. I mean, I keep hearing it, let each man's idolatry speak, and that's what I am seeing and hearing from myself and everybody else. Your idolatry speaks.
The only reason the idol has any possibility of being there is from the basic lie that you need to change or do something or perform in order to be loved and accepted. Understand that? And you hear preaching when you're in that position as though you got to perform something. And so you don't have ears to hear. You know, I've said so often, if you ever hear what I've said, and you hear it as if I've asked you to do something, then you haven't heard what I've said. If you've ever heard that I've asked you to change, then you haven't heard what I've said. If I've ever asked you to change, really, then you should kill me. Because I am not a worthy presenter of the mystery. Please, I beg of you, touch that place in you right now and say, I don't ever have to worry about pleasing anyone. I don't ever have to try to perform. I don't ever have to dress in a certain way. I don't have to do anything in a certain way. I am accepted in the Beloved now and forever. Nothing in the universe can change that. You don't have to stop doing anything. You don't have to start doing anything. The act of the certainty of your acceptance will cause massive things to take place in your mind. Nothing in the universe can stand against it. But you have to see that if there's an area that you think you should change in, and in that arena you are convinced that you should, then that isn't weakness. That is a strength. That is an idol. And I promise you that I will be your worst enemy over that issue. Only so that God won't be your worst enemy over that issue. You are accepted in the Beloved without condition. If you believe you have to change in order to be accepted, then you have called unclean that which God has called clean. And if there's somebody that's telling you that you should be different than you are, then I promise you they are not preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ. They are preaching another Jesus. And for them, Jesus Christ has died in vain, no matter what their words are. Don't be at the end of the whip any longer. You don't have to be there. You can tell you have the authority to command your soul to be at rest. You have the authority to say, "Get thee behind me, Satan." You have the authority that you never again have to judge after the flesh, after the seeing of the eyes, or the hearing of the ears.